This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
That song can only mean one thing. It means it's 1:05 Saturday afternoon. My name is Pete Dillon. This is Cravings, your weekly fix of food and wine here on Joy 94.9. Today, it's all wine. I've got with me Rory Kent. He is the fellow that heads up the Young Guns of Wine, and I need to be fairly transparent. I'll do that little transparent bit after the foodie news when I introduce Rory properly. But good afternoon, Mr. Kent.
Good afternoon, Pete. How are you?
I am terrific.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, let's just put a vision in the minds of our listeners. You're a former Clio Bachelor of the Year finalist, aren't you?
You're bringing that up again.
I am. I know I brought it up last year, but, you know, there's a lot of water under the bridge since then. Rory will join us and tell us about being a finalist in Clio Bachelor, the Bachelor of the Year, amongst other things, because today's focus is all about wine. We have wine guru and god James Halliday. He is the man who is responsible for the Bible that is actually released today. So we'll speak with James and we'll pop across the Dutch to New Zealand and speak to Pinot Supremo from Witherhills, Ben Glover, a fellow I met just the other day and who has a really interesting take on wine and a beautiful language with which to describe it. That's all coming along with the foodie news. Stick with me. We're here until 2:00. And in the meantime, I expect you're going to open a bottle of something and sit around your lounge room and enjoy it. Last week, I opened a discussion with Richard Cornish around edible horse meat, and Chef Nick Pollard, who was preparing a series of menus for his Carlton restaurant, Embrace. Despite the demand from consumers, Embrace will no longer be serving horse meat after ugly threats against the chef. A peaceful protest gathered outside the restaurant during the first ever horse tasting dinner in Australia last week. An event that sold out within half a day, but Nick Pollard has later received threats of violence against himself and his restaurant. He said horse meat was on a trial menu. He's now abandoned plans to include it on the regular menu and at next month's Taste of Melbourne event. He says, and this is according to Larissa DeBecky in The Age, the dinner was very well received by our guests, but now I prefer worrying about my family and what's happening inside the restaurant than outside. Embrace will give a miss to the sale of horse meat, but I think horse will gradually be a part of Australian life. I'm hoping for your responses to this. This is an issue that I don't think is going to go away. Embrace was the first restaurant to offer it after Perth butcher Vincent Gareffa received special permission from the Western Australian government to sell it for human consumption on home soil. Gareffa has also received death threats from animal liberationists. Have you eaten horse, Rory?
No, I haven't. I actually used to have a few horses back in the day, and I wouldn't mind trying some. I don't know, but what's the bother, really?
Well,
they're cute.
At the risk of being accused of, and I will be accused, it's, you know, a bunch of nylon-wearing animal activists who are saying, we shouldn't do this. But if they realise the devastation that Brumbies are causing in the northwest of WA to agriculture and horticulture, which is the very, you know, lifeblood on which this country exists, then perhaps they may take a second look. But, you know, we can't stop people's opinions, and I respect the fact that...
Those particular horses come from? Were they Brumby horses, or were they raised for meat? Or?
There's a Brumby issue in the northwest of WA, and they're basically running feral.
Right.
And so someone has had the good sense to put together this opportunity to butcher and sell them both in Australia and for export.
Does anyone know what their actual gripe is, whether they're not slaughtered humanely? Or?
Well, I think it's very obvious that they are slaughtered humanely. It's not like people are just out crazily shooting them with guns. We'll come back to that because I think it's going to be an issue that will carry over a couple of weeks. Reported by John Lithley in This Week in the Australian, life is seldom placid for either of the Van Handel brothers since the Melbourne pair went separate ways in business several years ago. Big brother John, a partner in Melbourne's Long Grain, is planning to finally open upstairs at the almost five-year-old Little Bourke Street restaurant. The plan, he says, is for a big sexy bar with its own kitchen doing Long Grain's take on Thai bar food. Given delays that plagued the opening of the original Melbourne Long Grain due to structural issues, nobody's prepared to say just when the first betel leaf might be served. Long Grain Sydney has also recently announced plans to expand its dining space by putting the bar and a new food shop along with a production kitchen downstairs at its Surrey Hill site and linking them with an internal staircase. Channel 7-9 are launching an all-out assault on MasterChef after the finale scored a records rating last Sunday night. A whopping 5.74 million viewers across the nation saw Adam Liao win $100,000 and a cookbook deal. The finale had a peak audience of 4.35 million across the five capital cities and another 1.4 viewers in regional areas. And 7 and 9 won a piece of that action. 7 will have another series of My Kitchen Rules and is also contemplating bringing back My Restaurant Rules. It's also snapped up the rights to an Aussie version of Iron Chef, as well as Canadian show Conviction Kitchen, where ex-criminals learn how to cook. The latest chef to make the jump from kitchen to TV is executive chef of the European, Ian Curley. The British-born Tattooed Curley is about to be announced as one of the main faces in a new Channel 7 reality TV show based on cooking. This is the show that comes from Canada, Conviction Kitchen. Ian will be mentoring former young prisoners as they try to learn the trade. Nine has signed up last year's MasterChef winner Julie Goodwin for her own show Home Cooked. Nine is also set to produce Celebrity Chef Live from Melbourne's Crown Casino. Ten's fighting back with Junior MasterChef, which will screen from mid-October, and MasterChef USA, hosted by the very potty-mouthed Gordon Ramsay. Auditions for the third series of MasterChef Australia are to take place around the country from October. Ten's program manager, Peter Andrews, is confident MasterChef can weather the assault from 7 and 9. He's actually said they're quite flattered that they're both jumping on the bandwagon. So, food shows for days, it seems, on your box. Rockpool Bar and Grill's Wagyu Burger has become one of Melbourne's legendary dishes. Now Neil Perry plans to elevate the humble Aussie meat pie to the same status, not to mention the sausage roll. Expect to see them at the all-day or late-night Perry-run Crown Towers Lobby Bar, to be known as the Waiting Room. Perry says we'll benchmark all of those great Australian dishes, and he'll be dividing his time between Sydney and Melbourne, with Spice Temple opening in October, and Perth, where he's opening another Rockpool Bar and Grill in the Burswood Casino. Spice Temple will have current Rockpool head chef Ben Pollard in charge. There will be a recruitment day on the 14th of August for 90 front of house and kitchen positions across Spice Temple Melbourne and the Waiting Room. Turn up between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. with a copy of your CV and a photo. Given we are focusing on wine, Fine Wine Partners and Gourmet Traveller Wine will announce on Monday the Australian Wine List of the Year Awards. These have been going about 16 years and they are Australia's most recognised and respected national awards for wine lists. They say our aim is to reward the investment in time, skill and resources spent in developing quality wine lists from all venues, from restaurants and international hotels to pubs, wine bars and cafes and brasiers. That's Rob Hurst, Fine Wine Partners Chairman and President of Wine Communications Australia. The results of the awards will be announced on 2nd of August on their website and will be published in the August-September issue of Gourmet Traveller Wine on sale on Tuesday. Winners will be presented with their awards at a cocktail function on Monday, the 2nd of August. Are you going?
No. I am going to the Young Gun of Wine Awards.
Yeah, we're coming to that, don't worry. Sud 2 at the Como Centre has closed. The glamour younger sibling of the King Street Italian stalwart is the latest in a long line of ill-fated restaurants that have occupied the Toorak Road site. The Brasserie, the Venetian, Avenue, Soho and Bizarre Restaurant 2 have all had a go. The next restaurant to try its luck is at the split-level South Yarra premises. It's called Insieme, an Italian bar and restaurant run by first-time operators Christian Bonanni and Chef George Curie, who is the former head chef at De Palma's in Kew. And that is the foodie news, quite a deal of it. And very shortly, we'll be back to introduce my first guest, Rory Kent from the Young Guns of Wine Festival.
Yay!
This is Cravings on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon. It is just after 1:15 on a very important day in Victoria, not just the bringing down of the results from the Bushfire Royal Commission, but only 8 days out from the launch of the Young Guns of Wine Festival, headed up by my first guest, Rory Kent. Now, Rory, we spoke about this festival last year.
We did.
I need to be very clear this year that you're actually a client of mine with my business. So I'm just putting that out there for anyone who says, well, hang on, this is not very transparent. It is transparent. You weren't a client of mine last year.
No.
And so given that we've done it last year, there's no reason why we shouldn't do it again. It is an important festival in the wine landscape.
Yeah, absolutely. Last year was the first time we packaged it as a festival, and that proved to be a success. And we had, I think, about 10 events go on over the course of a weekend last year, and they all sold out. And so this year we're expanding the program, and we've got 9 days of events, 20 events over 9 days, all different sorts of events, from free tastings to dinners, lunches. We've even got a marketing conference looking at the business side of the game. So trying to grow and develop it.
Mm. So what is the festival ultimately? You've got 11 young winemakers.
So we began the Young Gun of Wine Awards in 2007, and essentially it was about communicating to the general punter that the wine industry is an exciting and contemporary place, and indeed it's many of the young winemakers that are setting a lot of tomorrow's trends, because typically they're not hung up on conventions, and they're a bit braver in their approaches and a bit more daring in their winemaking. So there's a lot of excitement with it. So the awards were about celebrating and recognising these people and connecting them to consumers in an event.
The event kicks off, the festival kicks off next Sunday.
It does.
There is a media launch, obviously, which will happen first, but then there's an event open to the public from 8 p.m. at Little Press.
Yeah, which is exciting, new venue.
So what's the public event all about?
Well, we've got an after party going on, so we're kicking off with some good wines down at the Press Club's new Little Press, and and that starts our sort of 9 days of action. So,
how knackered are you going to be after this 9 days?
Well, I'm already knackered right now. I tell you what, I tend to bite off a bit more than I can chew with regards to workload with putting this stuff together. But it's really exciting, and I think I'm living on adrenaline at the moment, and hopefully that will carry me through till August 16.
Now, Chief Judges Nick Stock, fellow judges Max Allen, who we know is a very well-known wine writer, Philip Rich from the Prince Wine Store, and Colin McBride, who was last year's winner.
Yeah, yeah, a man with a PhD and full-sleeve tats, so he's quite a conundrum.
It's not a sentence you hear every day. Noticeably missing, perhaps, is our very first guest, and he is with us on the phone. His name is James Halliday, and let's hear from him.
By draws to a close every year, wine lovers and people across the wine industry draw a collective breath as they await the announcement of the Bible. Who's going to be the winery of the year? Who's going to score what points? My next guest is Australia's most respected wine critic, wine judge, vigneron, and in a career spanning 4 decades has written numerous tomes, that is the Australian Wine Companion. In June he was awarded a Member of the Order of Australia for his contribution to the wine industry, and some may say that was well overdue. He's pretty much the go-to man when you even think about wine, and I'm honoured to welcome him to Cravings, James Halliday. Welcome.
Thank you.
First of all, congratulations on your OAM.
Thank you. Well, actually, it's the AM.
Oh, sorry, the AM. I beg your pardon.
Don't worry.
how humbling is that to receive that sort of praise?
Of course, it's humbling, but I also, in a sense, take comfort that it's as much a recognition of the importance of the Australian wine industry to the social fabric of the country as well as its economic fabric.
Mm. How do you just know so much about wine, James?
Well, I'm approaching my 72nd birthday. I still work a 7-day week and pretty long hours during those days. So, you know, that's how I guess it fits in.
Now, the book is eagerly awaited by many people across the industry, particularly for the announcement of the Winery of the Year. And this year, that goes to a winemaker in his own right, but also somebody who consults as a winemaker, Larry Cherubino, over in WA.
Yes, and by sheer coincidence, and nothing more than that, because Matt Skinner and I did not exchange a word to each other on the subject, in his annual Matt has also made Larry Cherubino Winemaker of the Year, which is quite a... I'm sure it's never happened before, and I doubt that it'll ever happen again. So, needless to say, Larry is beside himself with joy.
I can only imagine, and now we await the printing of Nick Stock's book to see if he comes up with the same result.
Yes, well, who knows? Perhaps he will.
So this book is obviously a culmination of your year's work.
Yes.
And each time you release that, that's wines you've tasted, usually more than once over the year. Something, almost 1,500 wineries?
Yes, well, you've got to remember these days that an awful lot has to go over to the website because against everyone's preconception, we keep on getting new wineries, 107 or whatever it is this year, and we don't have nearly as many deaths as you would think, so the gross number, or the net number at least, continues to swell, and over 8,000 wines tasted for this year, more than ever before. So you'd end up with an elephant-sized book, and you simply can't do that to put cram everything into the book.
And being soft cover, you can't, because people need to be able to carry it about and have it as there.
Exactly, and it won't stand up to repeated opening and closing if it's 900 pages. It'll just fall to pieces.
Mm. So the book has got full tasting notes for almost 4,000 wines. How's your liver?
Well, I spit. I spit, and all I really want at the end of the day is a beer to recalibrate the pH of my mouth.
Yeah, so I've spent a bit of time with Dan Sims and Ben Edwards from The Wine Guide, amongst other wine writers, and I have always needed a beer at the end of a long lunch with those boys.
Yes.
So you started Brokenwood Winery in the Hunter Valley?
Yes, 1970.
1970. You then migrated south to the colder climate of Coldstream here in Victoria.
Yes, ostensibly for my law firm, and indeed I did remain yoked to the law for another 5 years after I got down to Victoria.
Where's the passion come from to keep going? Like you said, you're getting on a bit.
There's just something there that the engine is still ticking over. I suppose one of these days, I know that one of these days it'll stop ticking, but for the time being at least, I still enjoy it sufficiently, and that's actually quite sufficiently to take on what I do take on.
Mm. And are you like the rest of us when you sit down and enjoy a meal with somebody or even just in your own home, you just feel like a glass of wine, or are you sick of wine?
Oh, no. I drink wine most evenings. Paying no attention whatsoever to National Health and Medical Research Council guidelines, I drink these days substantially less than I used to.
Yeah.
So I probably most usually satisfy myself with half a bottle at night, two glasses. If I haven't been tasting all day, I might look for a bit more. And, of course, there are the numerous dinners that I go to across the 12 months, some of which are fairly extravagant, so I guess I get my fair share once you tot it all up.
Yes, I'm not feeling so flash myself. I was at a Pinot lunch yesterday and kept going into the night.
One does act in haste and repent at leisure, yeah.
Absolutely. James, looking at the industry this year, what have been the major challenges, do you think? You've said there's another 111 wineries that have debuted in the book this year. How do we keep new wineries but yet face these challenges?
Just one thing in passing. Of course, the good thing has been a return of rain to so much of the drought-affected parts of southern Australia. Nothing to do with the Murray-Darling here, but, the Yarra Valley and right across, southern South Australia and southern Victoria. So that's been a real plus. The bigger question, I think the announcement that by Wine Australia that it was opening, and indeed is just about to open, it'll be this month, i.e. August anyway, offices in Beijing and Shanghai, and that it believes that there is a probability, a fair degree of probability, rather than possibility, I think is the way they phrased it, that China will become Australia's largest wine market. Now, that is an astonishing development. I will rush on to say that I think I could point to articles that I've written at least 5 years ago saying that in the future China will become extremely important, and somewhere in the then future it would become the largest wine market in the world for all exporting countries. It would import more wine, in other words, than any other country.
And not just Australia, I'm assuming. From places like Argentina South Africa.
That's indeed the point I'm making. But Australia is, it probably comes as a surprise to some people to find just how well we're positioned, because in terms of, looked at from the Chinese perspective, a bit over 40% of wine imported is French, and that's hardly a surprise. And we are in second position with 20%, a little over 20%. And then the next nearest competition is 8% each for Chile, South Africa, and California. So, and in turn, China is our fourth largest export market at the moment.
Yeah.
The implications are extraordinary because while it is fourth, its volume is about one-fifth of the amount that each of the UK and the US take.
Mm.
Now, where, you might we then ask, where is this wine going to come from? Well, it'll very rapidly mop up any surplus.
Any gluts.
Very, very damn quickly. And I think it's then, on the face of it, going to become a question of, well, where are we going to get the wine from? Are we going to miss out on sales to China or other export markets because we don't have enough wine? It's quite possible.
Which, for grape growers and what have you, up in around Mildura, for example, who are just mowing down their vines that have been in the ground for 60 years because they can't sell the fruit.
Yes, and there is yet another double play. The implicit threat by the Labor government to review the tax on wine once economic conditions improve. I think on the face of it, they will move to an excise-based or alcohol-based tax, which will very significantly increase the price of cask wines, which still have a big slice of the domestic market, 40%. I mean, it's amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
That much?
Yes. It's a volume thing, of course.
Yeah.
That price will go up, but so will the cost of water. Whatever else comes out of the review of the Murray-Darling system, we just know that the license fees for use of water will really significantly increase. So there's going to be a double whammy that sector of the market. Yet, on the other hand, all of a sudden, perhaps, anyone who is dogmatic about this and says there is no doubt that there are so many things at stake here. But looking at the probabilities, there will all of a sudden be demand for their wines once again. And we've got recent history. The vine pool scheme in South Australia was put into force in 1987, and a whole lot of particularly old vine Grenache and Mourvèdre, but also old vine Shiraz, was pulled out because there was just a glut through the previous 3 or 4 years. I mean, people have got incredibly short memories. And then exports took off, and within a year, grape prices were going through, or going upwards, ultimately through the roof. And everyone has ever since bewailed the loss of those old vines. So it won't be a case of ancient history repeating itself. It'll be a case of recent history.
So apart from this very scary tax that is potentially around the corner, and climate, are we over the global financial crisis when it comes to the way that we consume wine, do you think?
I happen to be looking at a quarterly report from Wine Intelligence, which is a very big UK-based, they look at various consumer markets, but this one, of course, is concerning wine. And it was just saying that in the US there had been a period of trading up after the depths of the GFC, when there'd been massive declines in price habits, that the trading up has now slowed down. So there's been a kick in bottle spend or individual purchaser spend, but now it's slowing. I mean, I wished I knew. If you could tell me, I'd know what to do with the tattered remnants of my superannuation fund.
If somebody might have a suggestion, if you're listening, James Halliday is my guest. He is Australia's most respected and lauded wine writer, vigneron, critic and judge. He joins me at the moment. 0427-JOY949 is the text number, 1300-JOY949 if you wanted to call the desk, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. This is Cravings. My name is Pete Dillon, and back to James Halliday. James, I want to talk a little more about the book, because the way you set this book out each year is It makes it incredibly easy to use. If only it was a bit smaller and fitted in most people's handbags.
Well, can I be outrageous and say there's just for the new iPhone, or indeed for any iPhone, an app went up the other day with
excellent.
All 55,000 tasting notes on it. So that is, I suppose, one way around the issue.
It is, and that's something that people can take with them into their wine store, their local wine store,
yeah.
or indeed one of the chains if that's how they should so choose.
Yeah.
You're still making wine?
Well, I live on the Coldstream Hills vineyard and winery property. My wife and I own the house. We bought that back after South Corp acquired Coldstream in 1996. I still consult there, consult to Coldstream Hills. I do all of my tastings for the book. I'm incredibly fortunate to have the facility there, the space there to be able to organise all the tastings. And it's still my baby, and it always will be my love child.
Yes. Do you have the same affection for Brokenwood?
No. But don't get me wrong.
I know, just it was a very blunt no.
I suppose it's the youngest child that gets all the
and gets the love spoiled, yes.
So that's I have an enormous regard for Brokenwood. And I'll be going up there for its 40th birthday celebrations in a couple of months' time.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have to admit you've had some help with some of these tastings.
Yes, Ben Edwards has joined me on the treadmill this year. I'm still doing most of them, but it's definitely part of a longer range strategy to get. Ben, and who knows, down the track we may need more than one person. If you look at some of the parallels around the world, there's a South African annual called the John Platter Guide.
Yep.
Mitchell Veazey bought the title John Platter, even before it was bought, because he still had the title.
Yep.
And the title. But even before he'd sold it, they had a panel of four or five tasters to do the wines.
Mm.
I think really in part depend on the ability of people to find the time to taste 8,000 wines a year. I mean, how are you going to cut up the cake?
That is my next question, because if we were to break that down to a week. And we've got, let's say, 50 weeks that you taste. That's what, 130 bottles at least a week? I don't know how my maths is.
I do, once I get into the thick of the tastings, for day after day, I'm currently embarked on the top 100 for the Weekend Australian. And that typically gives rise to somewhere between 1,200 and 1,500 wines.
Yeah.
And for that, I'm indeed for all of the tastings I do through the year, I taste. I've cut it back. I used to taste more, but I've decided now I don't want to do it that way. So I do 120 wines a day.
How do you keep your palate fresh? This is something for people who obviously don't have the depth of understanding of wine that you do, but certainly for those people listening in this afternoon will be wondering, how do you keep your palate so that wine number 118, you can pick those nuances against wine number 2?
Yeah, well, I've constantly refined my techniques over the years. In 7 or 8 years ago, I introduced into the Australian show system, while I was still chair of a number of the major capital city shows and fair few regional shows, something that I'd picked up in South Africa more than anywhere else, where they've always routinely alternated white and red classes there.
Mm.
And so I introduced that into the show system. It was, and I told the panel chairs they could do it the old way and do the light-bodied white wines first up, moving to fuller-bodied white, then light-bodied red, then full-bodied red.
Yeah.
Once they'd tried it, and there was some scepticism before they'd actually tried it, and grumbling and whatever, I think that's become fairly standard practice. And certainly for my tastings, I have the whites along one side of the table, reds along the other side, and I will go backwards and forwards between white and red wine every dozen, give or take a bit, sometimes a bit less, sometimes a bit more.
So if you're tasting something like a nice big tannic Cabernet Sauvignon and you've gone through a series of those, you zip across to a nice, you know, like a quarter veil Riesling or something so that it'll sort of bring back the kick to the palate. Is that how it works?
Yeah, well, I mean, exactly. The white wines remove the tannin build-up from your mouth, which you do get not so much with Pinot, but certainly with all other red wines.
Yep.
And conversely, the red wines soften the acid build-up that you get with white wines.
Uh-huh.
And then I also rinse my mouth out with soda water every six or seven wines is another neutralizer, and I have olives for red wines and cheese, hard cheese to nibble on every now and then for white wines.
Okay.
And again, it's the olives are quite extraordinary if people haven't tried them and wonder how on earth you can taste a lot of red wines. They are really effective at stripping tannins out of your mouth. But there is an add-on, of course, with alternating white and red.
Yeah.
So there's been quite a few changes. Perhaps because I'm getting older and more cunning, or perhaps it's just because I'm getting older.
Is this all going to be now referred to as the Halliday Method, I think?
Why not?
Have we coined a phrase, perhaps, James? Look, it's been an honour and a privilege to have you join us on the show. I know that you're a very busy man, and certainly with the book being released today, you've now no doubt got a busy couple of weeks ahead as you probably take it on a publicity tour, I'm assuming.
Yes, I've been up in Sydney yesterday sloshing around in the rain without an umbrella because we're running too fast from A to B to C to D to even stop and buy an umbrella.
Oh dear, I'd be sacking your publicist, I think.
Well, she was with me, one of them. But anyway, we got through it. And I did buy an umbrella when it was almost all over, so I've now
you've got a spare one.
I'll lose very quickly, of course.
Yeah, I lose them all the time as well.
Yeah.
James, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. And again, our sincerest congratulations on the nod from the Queen, I guess, with your Member of the Order of Australia. And it's such a privilege to have had you on the show.
Thank you.
Very gorgeous man, James Halliday. I did actually catch up with him earlier in the day. He's currently at the Prince Wine Store signing books. That 2011 Wine Companion is a wonderful tome. Have you seen it yet, sir, Mr. Kent?
No, I haven't. But I'll be looking out for the iPhone app.
Yes, because there is an iPhone app. He did mention in that interview that there has been or just been released a James Halliday iPhone app. So when you take your iPhone to, and I think that's enough times for using that one word, when you take your phone to the wine store and you're looking for wine, you can just jump onto that app and type in Riesling and up will come
a Riesling.
Larry Cherubino or KTN the Falcon or one of those lovely folks. So
he's getting 2.0, James Halliday.
He is.
72.0.
You're quick. Look at you go. Comedy and all. The voice you can hear is that of, mine is Pete Dillon, presenter of the program here at Cravings on Joy 94.9. The other voice is Rory Kent. He is the fellow that heads up the Young Guns of Wine Festival. As mentioned earlier, they are a client of mine, but when we first met Rory last year, they were not a client of mine. So I'm just making clear that it's very, very transparent.
It's all above board.
It is. Now, you guys have got an iPhone app being released as well.
We do. We do. We're just waiting for Apple's release of it, so long as there's no
conflict.
No content on there that they deem to be too promiscuous.
Mm.
So we had to cut out all the bad language for that, but it should be coming out any day now.
I shouldn't imagine there would be too much bad language around 11 young winemakers.
A little swear word here and there doesn't go astray.
We're allowed several on this show every hour, so...
Fucking great.
See, the last person to say that naughty F-word was Luke Mangan when he was in here a couple of weeks ago and being very misbehaved, I might add. Now, somebody's listening. Thank you, Fred Kelly. James Halliday is a busy man. He's having a really interesting discussion with Pete Dillon right now on Cravings on Joy 94.9 Melbourne about the amazing growing wine market in China. He's just finished signing his new wine Bible at Prince Wine Spirits this morning, and it says Pete is doing a show with Rory Kent, also discussing the Young Guns of Wine Festival. We were going to talk to Pinot Supremo Ben Glover, but there just isn't enough time to get the carrier pigeon across to New Zealand and back.
I'll tell you what else is happening at the Prince Wine Store.
Yes, do.
That's the People's Session on August 14th of the Young Guns of Wine Festival.
Geez, you're good. What is the People's Session? Because there is a People's Choice opportunity in this festival.
There is a People's Choice Award. So there's two awards. One's the Young Gun of Wine that's determined by our judging panel. And then,
and if people want to look at the trophy for that or indeed find more information, they can, of course, go to younggunofwine.com.au.
Is that and .com.
And .com.
Both.
Jeez, look at it. International, yeah. You are. International.
So I think one of the cool things for people to check out when they get to the website is our trophy design. So we've got a new trophy this year. Our first few years we had a gold-plated pistol, and we've got a relationship with an industrial design firm called Charwood, and Paul Charwood is the guru.
Hang on. Let's just go back to the gold-plated pistol, because I'm assuming now with current regulations of people flying, if somebody from Perth has won this trophy and they're trying to get it through their hand luggage at the airport to fly home, it's not going to get there.
Well, yeah, funny you should say that. The first year, Troy Kolesky, Brossen winemaker, boarding the plane back to South Australia the next morning, having won the People's Choice Award, gets on his flight with a hangover, I might add. Yeah. You know, it was a large night of celebrating.
Yes, of course.
And he got booted off the plane.
For having a gun in his hand.
Yeah, they thought he was packing heat.
That's hilarious.
It has happened. But this year, Charwood had the opportunity to design us a new trophy. So they've custom designed a gorgeous trophy, and
you should keep looking at the mic. So
it's very heavy, our trophy.
And it looks heavy.
So you can obviously judge a trophy by its weight. So
well, I believe so.
It's on exhibit at the Prince Wine Store right now in South Melbourne. So if you're interested to have a look, people can pop along and check it out.
Now, speaking of being on exhibit, I have to mention this because I did do this at the top of the program. Last year, you were a finalist in the Clio Bachelor of the Year. How fun was that?
You know, it was a bit of a laugh, Peter. You're bringing this up again. You know, yeah, it makes me uncomfortable.
I know it makes me uncomfortable. I like to make my guests uncomfortable when they're sitting in the studio.
It's bad enough that there's some very embarrassing photos still online.
Well, are they up on the site? Because
we haven't put them at the Young Gun of Wine site. So
these listeners in particular might be interested in looking at, because gay men and the occasional lesbian likes to look at pictures of semi-naked men.
Well, the great thing about gay men is that they typically have a lot of single female friends.
Oh, there you go. I love the way you work. Now, let's also talk about... That's enough about you being Cleo Young. I can see you blushing. Let's talk about the conference, because I think the conference is a great opportunity to look at, I guess, trends in not just the wine industry, but more... broadly.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said at the start of the program, in principle, this whole Young Guns of Wine thing came about because it was about sort of connecting new audiences to wine in a compelling way, and you know, that's very much about communication, the way we communicate wine and present wine and these sorts of things. And so with this conference that we're putting together, we've got a lot of speakers from outside of the wine industry, people who are leaders of their game in fashion and music and et cetera. And so theoretically, it's an opportunity for the wine industry to see some examples of innovations and ideas occurring in other categories and perhaps find something that they could adopt to delivering wine. Yeah.
I'm going to put some music on in the background because there's a little song called The Wine Song that we really should be playing. But in the meantime, I'm going to challenge you. There are 11 young winemakers. What are their names and where are they from?
Oh, God. Alex McKay, Collector Wines. Andrew Marks.
Hang on, where's Collector Wines?
Collector Wines is
in the
Collector.
Are you looking at your iPhone? You are.
No. We've got Andrew Marks at Wanderer. We have, I'm going in alphabetical order.
Can I have your phone?
Dan Buckle from Mount Langigiran.
Yes, in Victoria.
Elena Golikova-Brooks, who's really interesting. So she's got Project Dandelion Vineyards in South Australia and Chien Epico in Spain.
Right. Now she's originally from Bulgaria, my research.
Yeah. So she's not the only one making wine from Spain. So is Andrew Marks with Wanderer Wines, who's doing some fantastic stuff in Yarra Valley as well as in Porta in Spain. We have Erin and Janet Klein from Naringa Biodynamic producers, husband and wife duo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting lost in the alphabetical order now, but
Franco?
With Franco Da Anna, he's a PR machine. He's everywhere at the moment. So, Franco, it's incredible the wines that he's making at ridiculous prices. So, he's doing some great stuff from the Yarra Valley and Gippsland with Chardonnays and Pinot.
Five more to go, and they don't need to be in order because we've got to wrap this up very, very quickly.
Right. We have from Western Australia, Glenn Goodall, Xanadu.
Yep.
From Mornington Peninsula, we have Mike Alwood from Ocean 8.
Yeah.
Rollo Crittenden, Los Hermanos. Yeah. Crittenden Estate.
Two more to go.
Oh, God.
One of them's everywhere at the minute.
Everywhere.
Including in today's A2.
Mac Forbes. He's the man.
And one more, a young lady.
Sarah Fagan from DeBortley. How could I forget Sarah? Go. She's there doing stunning stuff. She was Gourmet Traveller Young Winemaker of the Year last year.
She was. Now, we do have to go. Rory Kent, thank you for sitting with me for the hour and talking about the festival and meeting James Halliday. And I'm sorry we didn't get to talk to Ben Glover. Younggunofwine.com will take you to the site.
Yes, it will.
And people can buy tickets and come along.
They certainly can. Please do.
That's
Bye now.
From the Young Kind of Wine. My name is Pete Dillon. I will be back next week with yet another episode of Scintillating Food and Beverage Discussion here on Joy 94.9. Enjoy your week.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation. Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.